Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Slaying at the Saloon by Beth Dolgner. Narrated by Patria Burchard. Chapter 1. Please continue to hold. Your call is important to us. By our estimate, a customer service associate will be with you in approximately 32 minutes.
You told me it was 31 minutes, 4 minutes ago, I shouted at the automated voice on the other end of the line.
Olivia.
Damien's voice was firm, frustrated, and the more I heard it, the more it annoyed me.
This whole thing is stupid anyway, I grumbled.
Damien sighed and flopped back against the love seat in my little apartment.
You have to update your car insurance anyway, so it makes sense to use this as an exercise in controlling your conjuring skills.
Maybe, I said through clenched teeth. I should be wishing to get a real human being on the line so I can get this done. Instead, you want me to be patient.
Learning to control your emotions is a huge part of learning to control your abilities. If you can't even wait on hold without getting frustrated, then how are you going to react in a high-stress situation?
Damien had already shed his suit jacket, leaving him in his charcoal gray pants and black button-down shirt. As I glared at him, he began to roll his cuffs up, exposing his muscular forearms.
Too bad I can't get another look at those biceps.
I blushed at that thought, which at least helped distract me from the fact I had been on hold for 20 minutes already. I had put the cell phone on speaker, and tinny jazz music emanated from it, making my apartment feel more like an elevator. I like to think I do better in an emergency than I do when I'm waiting for customer service, I said defensively. In fact, when faced with a real do-or-die situation, I had a bad habit of freezing up. It was pretty much the opposite of letting my emotions get out of control. They would just shut down completely.
Damien leaned forward, resting his elbows on his knees.
Please stop that.
Stop what? When he raised an eyebrow at me and nodded in my direction, I paused, wondering what he could be talking about. Then I heard it. A rhythmic tap-tap, barely audible over the music coming from the flip phone Damien had loaned me. I was drumming my fingernails on the small formica table that sat in front of my equally diminutive kitchenette. I slapped my palm flat on the table. Sorry. Damien absolutely believed I was some kind of supernatural being called a conjurer, a person who could want something so badly they actually made it happen. He thought it was how I had gotten a job at Nightmare Sanctuary Haunted House, even though there were no openings at the time. I didn't know how or why the index card advertising the job had shown up on Nightmare's local job board, nor did I know why it had been in the handwriting of Baxter Shackelford, who had gone missing 6 months before the notice appeared. What I did know was that I was just an average, ordinary, nothing special human. Still, Damien insisted on giving me lessons to control my alleged abilities because he was convinced I could be dangerous otherwise. I knew he was doing it partly out of fear about his own unexplored supernatural abilities, but I had agreed to play along. Because if there was any chance I was a conjurer, then maybe I could use those skills to find Baxter. As Damien's father and the owner of Nightmare Sanctuary, there were a lot of people who wanted to find him and bring him home safely. I sighed. Okay, if we're going to be sitting here for another half an hour or so, can you please run down to the vending machines and get me some chocolate chip cookies? Without waiting for Damien to answer, I got up and grabbed my purse off my bed, then fished out 3/4. Damien's mouth twisted into something that was half frown, half amused smile.
Will eating cookies help you control your emotions?
I think it's a theory worth testing.
Damien disappeared out my front door. I lived in an efficiency apartment in the rear corner of Cowboys Corral Motor Lodge, and having the vending machines and an ice machine downstairs was handy. I counted out 10 seconds, long enough for Damien to get down the steps that led to the ground floor, and let out a loud yell. I just needed to express my frustration in vocal form.
The on-hold music didn't care. It kept playing, like I wasn't fighting the urge to chuck the phone out the window. When Damien got back, he handed me the cookies while peering at me with his green eyes.
The walls of this motel aren't that thick, you know. Shouting is not controlling your emotions.
In answer, I ripped open the package of cookies and shoved one in my mouth. And of course, that was the moment a voice on the other end of the line said, "Hello, thank you for your patience. May I please have your name and policy number?"
"Olivia Kendrick,"
I said, around a mouthful of cookie.
"Olivia Kendrick,"
Damien said, sitting down at the table with me. He picked up the plastic insurance card and read off my policy number. Once the call was done, I looked at Damien with a smirk. "You've been teaching me to control my emotions, but the minute I let my emotions out, I got someone on the phone 30 minutes before the automated system said I would." Damien ran a hand through his wavy, dark blonde hair.
"That's the problem, Olivia. When you let your emotions go, you're unleashing your power. It served you well just now. You got someone on the line. You got what you wanted. But what if the thing you wanted was more sinister? What if, say, someone rear-ended your car, and you got so angry you shouted that you wished they had gotten hurt to learn a lesson? You might actually cause that person to have injuries."
I closed my eyes to prevent myself from rolling them and reminded myself that even though I didn't take this whole conjuring business seriously, Damien certainly did. "You're right," I said. I didn't even open my eyes as I grabbed another cookie. As far as I was concerned, getting the customer service rep on the line earlier than expected had just been a coincidence. To Damien, it was proof of my supernatural ability.
"It's not the lesson I was trying to teach you, but I think it was valuable nonetheless," Damien said. "And it's a good thing you wrapped up the call, because you need to get to the saloon."
I opened my eyes and glanced at the clock on the wall. I was due to meet my sanctuary friends and co-workers at Nightmare Saloon in just 20 minutes. "You sure you don't want to come with us?" I asked. I had been trying to convince Damien that if he was going to run Nightmare Sanctuary in his father's absence, then he needed to socialize with its employees.
"I know where I'm not wanted," Damien mumbled as he stood. "I'll see you tomorrow."
"You'll see me the day after tomorrow. Remember, I'm off on Tuesday nights, too." I paused, then said, "Thank you for the lesson."
"Of course."
Damien didn't even say goodbye. He just let himself out, and I was suddenly alone. I changed out of my shorts and t-shirt and into dark blue jeans and a periwinkle blouse. I gave my shoulder-length auburn hair a quick fluff, touched up my makeup, and headed out. It was early September, and it was already dark, but it was hot out nonetheless. By the time I had made the walk from the motel to High Noon Boulevard, I was fanning myself with one hand. Nightmare Saloon was on the town's tourist street, High Noon Boulevard. The historic Old West buildings along the street had been preserved, and the asphalt had been covered with dirt to make it look like an authentic street from the late 1800s. Covered wooden boardwalks ran down each side of the street, and during the day, tourists would huddle under their shade to watch gunfight reenactments and other costumed actors who portrayed the Wild West. The saloon was as much a part of the show as the actors. The entrance had short swinging doors, making it look like something from a Western movie set. Inside, dark wood paneling and low lighting from dusty chandeliers really set the mood. Mondays were typically quiet in Nightmare, since tourists mostly flocked to the former mining boomtown on weekends. But on this evening, I walked in to see nearly every seat was occupied. I found my friends at two tables near the front, their chairs already turned to face the low stage, which was hidden by a thick red curtain trimmed in gold fringe. Thankfully, they had saved a seat for me, and I slid into it. "Wow, I didn't realize this musician was so popular," I said in greeting.
"Allie was great the last time she played in Nightmare," responded Theo.
He was looking particularly handsome this evening, even though he was only wearing jeans and a white t-shirt. His brown hair flowed down to his shoulders, and his brown eyes always had a mischievous look. Theo grabbed the pitcher of beer sitting on the table, filled an empty glass, and slid it toward me.
You look like you need this, he said, grinning.
Even though he was a vampire, Theo had no fangs, so his teeth looked totally normal. I thanked Theo and raised the glass toward him, then took a sip. Before I could swallow, though, the pitcher began to slide along the table by itself, and I gasped, then coughed. Malcolm gave me a thump on the back with a pale, bony hand. While my other friends from the sanctuary tended to dress normally when they left the year-round haunted house where most of them lived and worked, Malcolm was in his usual long black coat and top hat. His tall form and gaunt features made him stick out in a crowd anyway, so I guessed he figured there was no point in changing his outfit. "Sorry, Olivia." It was Justine, and the pitcher was just coming to a stop in front of her. "It's a bad habit." Justine, who managed the sanctuary, had telekinetic abilities, and even though I knew that, I had never seen her move something with just her mind until that moment. "It's a pretty cool trick," I told her with a playful wink. "But forewarn me next time." The overhead lights dimmed, and the footlights across the front of the stage began to grow more brightly. "Here we go," Maury said excitedly. She turned to me, her burnt orange eyes intense even in the low lighting. "You're going to love Allie's voice, and I'm not biased just because she's a vampire like me." Unlike Theo, Maury did have her fangs, and they gleamed as she smiled at me. Just a week before, I had found out Allie Nunes was a singer who toured the country on what Theo referred to as the supernatural circuit. He had explained Allie favored tour stops in towns with a lot of supernatural creatures, even though she was popular with humans, too. Since Allie was a vampire, it made sense many of her fans would be supernatural. The red curtain rose slowly, and a spotlight illuminated the center of the stage. But there was no one standing there in front of the microphone. A few people at the table in front of ours gasped, and one woman cried out. I leaned forward, trying to figure out what they were seeing that I wasn't. There was something on the floor of the stage, but I couldn't tell what it was, since the heads and shoulders of the people in front of me were in the way. I half rose from my chair and immediately wished I hadn't. There was a woman, dressed as a saloon girl, sprawled on the stage, her open eyes staring blankly upward. A wooden stake was protruding from her chest. Chapter 2. I pressed a hand to my mouth and sat down stiffly. Around me, a wave of cries and shouts was spreading through the room as more and more people realized what they were seeing. There was a dead woman on the stage. No, not a dead woman, I realized. A murdered woman. See what I mean about me freezing during a crisis? If Damien were there, I probably would have said, "I told you so." I wasn't upset or crying or any of the many things going on around me. Instead, I was quietly seated in my chair, feeling slightly numb. I turned to Theo, whose eyes were darting around wildly. His fingers, I noticed, were gripping the edge of the table so hard he was leaving fingernail marks in the wood. His obvious fear finally elicited a proper reaction from me. I grabbed his face with my hands. "Theo, is it her? Did someone kill Allie?" Theo shook his head almost imperceptibly. I felt it under my hands more than I saw it.
"No," he said quietly. "That's not her. But I think it was supposed to be."
"What do you mean?" Malcolm leaned toward us.
"He means the woman has a wooden stake through her heart. This looks like the work of a vampire slayer."
Oh, no wonder Theo looks terrified. I glanced at Maury and saw that she, too, was keeping a wary eye on the people around us, though she seemed less upset than Theo. "A vampire slayer? What, did they stake the wrong person?" Even as I was asking, I remembered the dead woman was dressed as a saloon girl, meaning she was likely a server at the saloon.
"Maybe," Malcolm said. "It's also possible a slayer did it to scare Allie." "Or one of us,"
Theo moaned. Zack was one of the sanctuary employees seated at the table next to ours. He leaped out of his chair and shot toward us. My hands were still on Theo's cheeks, and I finally dropped them into my lap as Zack leaned down and said to him,
"You and Maury need to leave now. Malcolm and I will get you back to the sanctuary."
Theo nodded, but Maury said, "And what about Allie? We can't just leave her." "I'll stay," I said. "I'll go find her backstage."
"Me too,"
Justine stood up, her long chestnut brown hair swinging gracefully with the motion.
"Be careful, all of you."
In a flash, Malcolm, Zack, and the others had escorted Theo and Maury out of the saloon. I said a silent prayer they would make it safely back to the sanctuary, even as Justine grasped my hand and pulled me up. There was a door to the left of the stage that had an old-fashioned brass plaque on it reading, "Backstage." We had to elbow our way past the people who were crowding around the stage, even though someone was already lowering the curtain to block the view of the murdered woman. Once we went through the door, we found ourselves in a long, bright hallway that was lined with doors on the left-hand side. A door about halfway down stood open, and a man with small, anxious-looking eyes behind wire-rimmed glasses was leaning out of the doorway, staring right at us.
"We are looking for Allie," Justine called to him. "We are from Nightmare Sanctuary."
The man's face relaxed a fraction, and he waved us forward.
"Come on."
We hurried down the hall and into a small dressing room that looked like it had been in need of renovation for at least 2 decades. There was a beat-up white makeup table against the far wall, and the lighted mirror above it had several jagged cracks in the corners. A woman sat on a stool in front of the table, staring at herself while slowly twirling a lock of her long, strawberry-blonde hair. Her eyebrows were drawn together over intense blue eyes.
"Oh," I said. "She has a reflection."
The woman turned to me in surprise.
"Of course I do. Who are you?"
"I'm Justine Abbott, and this is Olivia Kendrick," Justine answered for me. "We both work at Nightmare Sanctuary Haunted House. You're safe with us. Olivia is new to our world, so please forgive her."
Even amid the fear and confusion, I suddenly worried I had committed some kind of supernatural faux pas, but Allie looked at me kindly.
"Don't believe everything you read in novels. We have reflections just like anybody else."
She nodded toward the man, who was staring at the hallway behind us.
"That's my manager, John. He's human."
"Me too," I said,
giving John a polite smile of human solidarity. He didn't seem to notice. Instead, he kept his gaze fixed on the doorway. I turned and shut the dressing room door, and John finally seemed to snap into the present moment. He tore his eyes away from the door and gave Justine and me a tentative nod.
"We're worried this might be the work of a slayer," Justine said, getting straight to business.
"Us too," Allie agreed.
"If you're here to be bodyguards, though, I don't think that's necessary."
John ran a shaking hand through his short brown hair.
"We can fend for ourselves."
I wanted to argue that he looked like he might quail if someone so much as raised their voice to him, but Allie spoke up first.
"Someone was just murdered, and it looks like a vampire execution. I'll take all the protection I can get, thank you."
For a brief moment, John looked annoyed, but he soon looked scared and anxious again. "We can take you to the sanctuary," I said. "It will be easy to guard you there." Allie shook her head.
"No, not yet. If I run away, the police will think I'm fleeing the scene."
Allie and John exchanged a brief but worried glance.
"I have to stay here until the police say I can go."
"Then we'll stay with you," Justine said.
There were a few folding chairs leaning against one wall, and she quickly set up two of them so we could sit. John, on the other hand, stood near the door, his eyes darting between it, Justine, and me. I wanted to tell him to calm down, but I figured we didn't know each other quite well enough for that yet.
"Do you know the woman?" I asked Allie.
"I don't know, maybe. I left the dressing room and went through the door that leads to stage right. Frankie said to wait just inside the door and to walk to center stage when the spotlight lit up. Except when the spotlight came on."
"Did you hear anything while you were waiting there? Any muffled cries or sounds of a struggle?"
John made a noise that was part disgust and part laughter.
"What are you, the town detective?"
"She's trying to help," Allie said.
She looked surprised by John's response to my questions.
"And no, I didn't hear anything. I don't know when that poor girl was murdered, but it didn't happen in the minute or so I was standing there waiting for my cue. I saw the ruffled black skirt and the red corset, and I saw that wooden stake. I didn't stop to look at her face before I ran back here. So, to answer your original question, I don't know who it is lying on that stage right now. I've talked to a number of the servers here this evening, but I don't know which one was killed.
Who's Frankie? Justine asked.
The owner of the saloon, John said impatiently. He had pulled a key ring out of his pocket and was slowly sliding each key from one side to the other. His anxious behavior was keeping my own heart from getting back down to a normal pace, so I looked away.
Yeah, Allie added. He's our main contact here. We scheduled the show through him. The last time we were here... Oh, no. My guitar! It was leaning against the wall while I was waiting for the curtain to rise. John, can you please get it?
John turned his head in slow motion to stare at Allie. Are you kidding me? There's a murderer out there, and you want me to go get your guitar? Are you trying to get me killed, too? Allie shook her head.
Never mind, she said quickly. You're right. It was stupid of me to ask.
I'll go get it, I said, rising. When Allie began to protest, I waved a hand. The police station is right down the street, which means they're here already, and the killer is probably long gone. I won't be in any danger. John took a long step back to keep his distance from me as I approached the door. Either that, or he was trying to get as far away from his imagined death as he could. I meant what I had said to Allie. I was absolutely convinced it was perfectly safe for me to leave the dressing room. Still, to make her and John feel better, I opened the dressing room door and dashed out as quickly as I could so they wouldn't feel exposed. Farther down the hallway was a door with a police officer standing guard beside it. Knowing it must be the door that led to the stage, I headed toward it. I went exactly 2 steps before the officer looked at me, crossed his arms, and said,
"Of course it's you."
I tried to smile in a casual, fancy meeting you here sort of way, but I'm sure it was more of a grimace.
"Officer Reyes," I said. "I just need to grab Allie's guitar for her. She said she leaned it against the wall just through that door."
"You know the singer?"
Reyes's eyes narrowed suspiciously.
"She's the friend of a friend, and she's shaken up by what happened, so I said I'd keep her company."
"How do you always wind up in the middle of our murder investigations?"
I raised my hands defensively.
"I just came to see the show tonight. I am not involved in your murder investigation whatsoever."
Reyes sighed.
"Good. I hope it stays that way. I need to question Ms. Nunes anyway. I'll grab her guitar and meet you both in the dressing room."
I thanked Reyes and hustled back to the dressing room so I could let the others know the questioning was about to begin. Reyes soon joined us, and after he handed over Allie's guitar, he looked at me pointedly.
"I need to talk to Ms. Nunes and her manager privately."
"We'll wait in the hallway," I said, already walking toward the door.
"Wait!"
Allie rose from her stool, one arm held out toward me.
"I don't know. I'm not..."
Her eyes flicked to Reyes nervously.
She's worried he might be the vampire slayer.
"I met Officer Reyes during a murder investigation about 6 weeks ago," I said, in as reassuring a tone as I could muster.
"And then a couple of weeks ago, during another murder investigation," mumbled Reyes.
I spared him a brief glare, then continued.
"You're in safe hands."
That seemed to be good enough for Allie, whose stance relaxed slightly. As we walked out, Officer Reyes asked for their full names.
"Alexandra Nunes and Jonathan Holcomb," Allie answered in a quavering voice.
I didn't hear any more, because 2 officers had just come through the stage door, and they ushered Justine and me out into the saloon, despite our protests that we were waiting for Allie. The lights had been turned up in the saloon, and the only people in there were employees and police. Justine sat down at the table nearest the backstage door, but I paced toward the front of the saloon, hoping to catch a bit of the fresh air coming through the front doors. Another woman dressed as a saloon girl was standing next to a man wearing a plaid western shirt and brown chaps over his jeans.
"It's karma, if you ask me," the woman said, her tone biting. "She stole from Frankie, and now she's dead."
Chapter 3 I slowed down to eavesdrop as clandestinely as I could, but the cowboy, whom I recognized as a bartender at the saloon, responded in such a low voice I couldn't hear him. When the two of them walked off, I was left to wonder what exactly the dead woman had stolen from the owner of the Nightmare Saloon. I was also left wondering if Frankie had killed her because of it. But, I told myself, surely no one would be dumb enough to commit murder at their own place of business. Or maybe it wasn't dumb, but absolutely brilliant, because it would automatically make them seem like less of a suspect. Then again, I remembered, it might have been a vampire slayer who did this, and the server I'd overheard was merely trying to make sense of a senseless murder. Not my business, I said quietly to myself. I was there to make sure Allie and John stayed safe, and that was it. There was no way I was going to wade into yet another murder investigation. The night air felt good as it wafted over the top of the swinging doors, and I closed my eyes while I breathed it in. Of course, it was hard to truly enjoy the moment since there was a crowd of people huddled outside, all staring toward me. The police had cordoned off the saloon entrance, looping yellow tape around the posts that supported the roof of the boardwalk, but it looked like half of Nightmare was just beyond it, standing expectantly in the dirt-covered street.
"Olivia!" Justine called.
I looked over to see her waving me toward the backstage door, where she was standing with Officer Reyes.
"Miss Kendrick," Reyes said seriously, "I know I teased you about showing up at another murder investigation, but I'm giving you and your friend here a task. Ms. Nunes and Mr. Holcomb are not to leave town until we have solved this case. I'm counting on the two of you to keep a close watch on them." I was too surprised to say much, but I agreed, and soon Reyes stalked away from us. He hopped up onto the stage, lifted the edge of the curtain, and slipped under it without giving us any view of what was happening behind it.
"I think the safest place for them is the sanctuary," Justine said. "We can protect them, if this really is the work of a vampire slayer. Plus, if they're staying there, keeping an eye on them can be a team effort."
I was thinking the same thing. Allie was packing her guitar into its case when Justine and I got back to the dressing room. Justine immediately proposed her idea, adding, "There are windowless guest rooms for vampires, and our werewolf Zack does a security patrol. You'll be safe." "I'd rather be on the road. I can't make money if I'm stuck here," Allie grumbled. "It's a free place to stay, at least," I pointed out. Allie sighed, and her shoulders slumped.
"I'm sorry if I sound ungrateful. I'm just upset about this whole situation. And scared."
"We'll make the best of it,"
John said tightly, patting Allie's arm. Since Allie and John were touring in a van, Justine and I helped them load up, found places to sit among the luggage and music gear, then gave John directions to the sanctuary. Soon, the van crested the hill in the dirt lane that led to the former hospital building, and the headlights swept across the dirty gray stone facade. Malcolm and Zack came outside as we were helping Allie and John unload their suitcases, and soon we were all inside the tall, grand entryway of the sanctuary. Zack handed the bag he was carrying to Justine.
"You and Malcolm can get our guests settled in. There's a basement room ready for Allie. I need to talk to Olivia."
As soon as the others had disappeared down the east wing hallway, Zack turned to me and said quietly,
"Theo is really upset."
"Of course he is. There might be a vampire slayer in town." Zack shook his head.
"No, I mean he's really upset. He didn't speak the whole walk back here, and then he just disappeared. None of us knows where he went."
I bit my lip. Theo was usually easygoing, but I knew he could get riled up when the occasion called for it. Scared so badly that he would hide, though? That didn't seem like him. Rather, he had always struck me more as the type who would run toward danger without worrying about possible consequences. "There's at least one psychic here, right? Or maybe the witches can do some kind of finding spell," I suggested.
"It won't be necessary. He's in the cemetery vignette."
It was Maury's voice, and I turned to see her standing a short distance away. Her black hair, which had been swept up into an elegant coiffure earlier, was slightly askew, and I thought I saw a damp streak running down the dark skin of one cheek.
I heard a whimper, and I looked down to see Maury's pet chupacabra, Felipe, crouched behind her legs. He had one clawed paw wrapped around her calf.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?